Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, proud of its ties to Alaska communities since 1977. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
Welcome to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz. Eagle River residents and military veterans Justin and Wella Jay know what it's like to spend weeks on a trail hiking and exploring together after tackling a through hike of the Appalachian Trail, an adventure they shared on an episode of Outdoor Explorer in 2018. But late last year, Justin headed out solo to take on his own long adventure, tackling the Continental Divide Trail and learning a host of life lessons about kindness and what you find on the journey. In this episode, Justin and Wella join Outdoor Explorer again to share some of those insights in a moving conversation about the magic of the trail and supporting someone you love as they take on a big adventure. That's just ahead on Outdoor Explorer. Welcome to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz. What can you discover about yourself and your relationships by thru-hiking? Eagle River residents and military veterans Justin and Wella Jay have explored those questions while hiking throughout the Lower 48, including on the Appalachian and Continental Divide trails. Join me, your host, Amy Bouchatz, on this episode of Outdoor Explorer as we talk about what you can learn about yourself and your world when you go on a long, long walk. Wella and Justin Jay, welcome to Outdoor Explorer.
Thank you.
Glad to be here. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah. So I want to give you both a chance to introduce yourselves. But let me also say it's nice to see you again because you've been on Outdoor Explorer before in 2018, I think.
Yes, that's correct. 2018.
Okay. With Charles Woolforth, who is a former Outdoor Explorer host who's no longer in the state, but he was a longtime host. And after hearing you on that episode, I actually had you on an episode of my own for a different project, which is like a million years ago and also yesterday.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like it was that long ago.
It's kind of crazy, right?
No, not at all.
But that was back in 2020, and it's 2026 now.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yes.
Amazing.
Yes.
Even though I keep writing 2025 on things, but it's not. It's 2026.
You get a grace period, I think, all the way through April.
Oh, good.
For the
okay.
Period. I'm
excellent.
Pretty sure. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot about that somewhere.
It's only mid-February as we're recording this. So, yeah. So that's good. Okay. So maybe you could both start by telling us about your past outdoor adventures that brought you on Outdoor Explorer before.
Yeah. So Wella and I did a through hike of the Appalachian Trail in 2017 through a nonprofit veteran organization named Warrior Expeditions. And after we'd completed that hike, we really wanted to share our journey with others, specifically for the therapeutic nature of long distance hiking for combat veterans, because that's why we did the Appalachian Trail in the first place. Well, one of many reasons why we did the trail. And that just inspired us to try to get the word out there because it wasn't solely about us. We wanted to really emphasize what the community meant to us because no one does these long distance adventures alone. It takes a village, so to speak. And we just wanted to share that.
Yeah. And you're both military veterans.
We are.
Yes. Well, that was way cooler than I am at that, but yes, we are.
Tell us about how your cool plays out.
That's not fair.
What does he mean by that?
We both worked in the same field, so we were both officers in the military. We worked in the Medical Service Corps, primarily as medical logisticians. But what he means is, and we were also paratroopers, which means we jumped out of airplanes on the side for fun. Not always for fun. What he means is I had an opportunity to volunteer for an organization or program called the Cultural Support Team, which is an organization that was founded back when we were still active in Afghanistan. And it was a trial program before the full combat integration. And the full combat integration was when women had the opportunity to finally go to Ranger School and work in special operations. But before that, the military had to figure out, well, are women capable of doing that? And can they work along special operations without compromising the mission, what have you, whatever else they needed to verify for themselves? And so this trial program gave me an opportunity to serve along Marine and Army Special Operations in a support role and join them in all of their missions and work in that field, which was a really eye-opening experience and showed me that the gender balance in all of these fields is really important, whether or not the military believes that, especially today, and that women don't have to turn into men to work in those fields, and that the femininity that we bring to those fields has huge benefits, especially in those, on that battlefield, in those environments. And we were able to talk to women and children, gather information, provide medical services, but also just kind of bring down the overall energy on the battlefield, which I think was important.
Yeah. And by the way, that is really cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Correct advertising.
Thank you. But yeah, that's, I had an opportunity to do that for a year, and it was a life-changing experience for me.
Yeah, I bet. And Warrior Expedition, it's still operating, right? And still send people out on through hikes?
Sure is, yeah. Yeah. They've downsized a little bit more, which makes a lot of sense with the organization. So a little bit of history on that is they used to do the state trails in addition to things like the Big Three. The Big Three being the large national scenic trails that run across the United States, the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail. And what their founder had realized is they had expanded so quickly because there's such a big demand for this, and it's such a wonderful thing. But what he noticed was he was starting to get a little bit more on the quantity, and the quality might have slipped a little bit. So I wouldn't say it slipped, but it was becoming untenable with the team that they had. And they have scaled back down to now where they do two groups on the Appalachian Trail, whereas they used to do just one. They no longer do the Pacific Crest. They no longer do the Continental Divide. They continue to do the Bike Across America, and then they also do the full canoe of the Mississippi River. I can't speak to the state trails right now. I don't think they're doing those anymore, but I very well could be wrong. But that's the basis of Warrior Expeditions.
Yeah, yeah. And my husband, Luke Bouchatz, did a state trail with them. And I think after I heard your episode, we looked into that. So, he did the Buckeye Trail, which is a trail that goes around Ohio.
So
like,
cool.
You can through hike.
Awesome.
I don't know if people have never occurred to them that you can through hike Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
But
I've seen photos of it. And you're like, there's no way that's Ohio. Because what I know Ohio is basically the highway running up the middle, and it's usually icy. And it looks like seeing rolling hills and beautiful scenery. It's like,
although I do understand that quite a lot of it was like pavement in towns. But like through hiking's not always in the woods, right? Like if you're gonna hike the entirety of a state or something, mm-hmm. you're gonna hike through towns and mm-hmm. cities, and and of course the connection to home is what the point of that is. And
absolutely,
That's Ohio.
So
So that's worked out. So today we're going to talk about what you've been up to since your episode. Okay, what we just were talking about is really important scene setting for that, okay? Mm-hmm. Because everything feeds into each other in life. So I'm wondering, how many hiking miles do you think you've logged since that episode in 2018?
Not as many as you might think. Funny enough, so we came off the Appalachian Trail, and though we thoroughly enjoy hiking, we're like, man, we've got to find a way to make a living, obviously. And not every job's going to give you, isn't going to give you 3 to 6 months off to go do these long distance adventures. So a lot of what we did was figuring out how to integrate micro adventures, things that were doable with maintaining a 9-to-5. And we've expanded that to things like biking, to kayaking, to rafting, to pack rafting. And one of my favorite adventures I have here locally, actually, that I like to do is combine multimodal transportation that's human powered. So that means taking a bike while you've got a backpack with a pack raft in it, and then self-shuttling yourself. One of my favorite runs, or ones that I've done in the past, was I'll bike from our house to the North Fork of Eagle River, which is, I don't know, 8 to 9 miles from where we're at, inflate my pack raft, downgrade the bike, put it into the raft, and then bike back to the next road crossing, and then ride myself back home. So at least 2,800 miles more, because that's what I did on the Continental Divide Trail, to answer your initial question, but not as many as you might think.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot. So what about you, Belle? Do you have micro-adventures you prefer?
I participate on a lot of them with Justin, and we've also done some section hikes since our Appalachian Trail through hike. So we've returned to the Appalachian Trail quite a few times. And like he was saying, I think it's a little harder to get that much time off when you're trying to also hold down a job.
Yeah.
But we did an 18 or 21 day section hike on the Appalachian Trail. And we do return to assist with Warrior Expeditions.
Okay.
So we return to help the next season of hikers every once in a while to go kick that trail off.
Such an incredible energy. You've done marathons and things like that, so you know the energy of an aid station on a marathon. Is everyone is just so stoked for you and so jazzed to be there, and you can feel it buzzing. Mm-hmm. And that's the same energy that surrounds the start of the Appalachian Trail. So we love returning to that, and especially being able to give back to the program is really special.
Yeah, it's also like a hit to hold you over until the next hike.
Yes. Oh, totally. But I find that here in state, like the ITI, the Iditarod Trail Invitational, which is a ski, bike, or run. Folks do like 100 odd miles or 300 or 1,000 up to Nome. Okay.
Yeah.
On the Iditarod Trail, but no dogs are involved in this. Okay. You're by foot, ski, or bike. And it's the same. You know, you go to the start line and it's just that like big adventure buzz of like, here we go, you know? And then everyone takes off and you go eat a sandwich.
So that's amazing.
You can debate who has it better. I don't know.
Yeah. That's a great question. I think something that we also started dabbling in after the Appalachian Trail was a lot of the long distance running or long distance adventures, mm-hmm. because we noticed that the community that surrounds those different activities and different sports is just so laid back, and it's such a fun environment. Even if you're doing one of those longer runs, you're probably going to be eating a sandwich as a participant, you know, 10 miles in, because you're running for, I don't know, 50 kilometers and you have a lot of time, and it just is so laid back. And it's been a beautiful way to explore the state.
Yeah.
So 100%.
Absolutely. And I love, well, I touched on something there with the vibe of the races as we're continuing on that theme. And I've got to say, I especially love the Alaska starts for races where it's just so... It's control. I don't know if it's even control chaos. Usually, the last couple ones
we've
done.
Can we talk about last weekend?
Yeah. Did a bike race for the first time, the Icy River Rampage out at Eagle River.
Okay.
And it was absolute chaos getting to the start. There were people riding their bikes, slipping down the hill. And
the start was the most dangerous part of the whole thing.
It was the most dangerous part. I was like, only in Alaska. Well, and I love it, too, is as a participant, I'm not a fast participants, so I'll be at the back or what have you, and everyone's kind of looking around and be like, oh, did it start yet? And you just see like groups randomly going. It's just lovely chaos.
Yes, I love it. I love that energy too, and I am totally with you. You know, snacks are a priority to me, so I've switched to the long distance adventures because guess what? You can have more snacks.
And they have
you're
the best snacks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's actually why I did the through hike.
Because you can eat like an unsupervised 5-year-old.
Yeah.
No one minds.
Listen, I hear that. For folks who listen to this have never had a very long adventure, do not appreciate the like all-consuming importance of snack life.
Oh, yes.
100%.
Oh, yes.
On the mind all the time. You hiked you did the entire Appalachian Trail, and then you returned to section hike it. So I'm wondering, now, I would never judge somebody for doing the same thing over and over again, because that's totally me. I love doing the same thing over and over again, but not everyone understands that. So why did you go back? What about it drew you back there?
Exactly that vibe that we were talking about, that feel for it. The ability to give back as well, because while you're out there too, you may have very new hikers. I think we'd run into a number of hikers that literally that was their first night in the woods, was starting their through hike, which to me is immensely brave. And they have all questions, and there's no such thing as a bad question that early, because you're so new to it. And being able to share that, because I've gone through, or we've gone through those trials and tribulations ourselves, where we know how difficult it is to be a beginner. So you're able to give back to that community and help people along the way, and then watch, obviously it's not an extended period, but this beautiful transformation of other people as they get more comfortable within their own skin out there in nature. And just being able to forward that and share that with others and take that experience that we've gleaned from our experiences is really something special.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about, there's that phrase trail magic, right? When you're doing a big adventure that's not hiking, that's a different kind of magic, aid station magic, whatever, right? But like being able to be a part of that seems mm-hmm. very, like, very key for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I also think with anything, when you give to anybody or any community, you receive. And so it's this really big circle, and it's a beautiful experience. And I think especially mm-hmm. in everyday life where sometimes things can feel more negative, it's a great reminder of what life is actually about, like what actually matters, and it's the human connection. And then seeing someone start their hike and have so much hope and so much excitement for a different future or a different experience, it's really inspiring. And it reminds you why you're actually here and that some things that seem so big in life really don't matter.
Totally. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz, and I'm here with Justin and Wella Jay, and we're talking about through hiking and adventures and doing big stuff and exploring outdoors. So you guys, I want to hear about hiking as a couple, too. I know I've talked to you about this before, not in this, maybe not even on Outdoor Explorer, but I was so fascinated by your discussion about this, in part because when I do adventures with my own spouse, they've gotten more awesome over time, but it is an emotional challenge, okay, in case he's listening to this. They've been great recently. But like in all seriousness, like that can be very trying on a relationship. Like if everything goes well, it can be great. If you've been in a relationship for a long time, it can be better or worse. But like you did the whole Appalachian Trail together and you're still here. So how did that happen?
Oh, snacks. Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
A stash of chocolate kept me alive in many circumstances. Yeah. Like it wasn't the wildlife I was scared of out there. I'm kidding.
He's not wrong. So I think what through hiking taught us, and you know, your reaction, Amy, isn't unlike what people told us as well. When we came in and announced that we were going to do this through hike and people saw how long the trail was going to be and then also saw our equipment and how tiny the tent was, they were like, no way, you guys are still going to be married by the end of this. And it was also our honeymoon, so.
I didn't realize that.
But in all fairness, I think we practice good communication, and I think that's the key to most human relationships, and realized really early on that I underpack severely all of my food all the time. So I probably pack about half of what I actually want, and generally I'm trying to be healthy when I go to the grocery store. And meanwhile, Justin's over there embracing the experience and getting his Snickers and Mars bars and peanut butter sandwiches. And so I think we learned over time that I just had to copy what he was packing, because even though I didn't want it in the moment, I would want it on trail. And then you always packed extra food because I was still going to underpack. And then that usually helped.
Absolutely. And Amy's already touched on this, but a huge thing about the through hiking is the food. I know we've already spent a pretty good portion talking about just food alone already getting into this. Just to give you an idea, it's going to be a recurring theme throughout the rest of this talk.
No, but, you know, when we discussed this before doing this episode, you know, years ago, I really appreciated us talking about it because it was like a major light bulb for me. Okay. So I have totally changed how I do my own food now, in part because of this conversation, and to the point that I have teenage sons who are like very in need of blood sugar management, because that's what this is about, right? And so now I'm extra in tune to them and they're extra in tune to me too. So like my kids are known to be like, are you hungry?
Oh, how
yeah,
cool.
I know. I'm like, yes, thank you. You know, and I am in tune to them. So my 13-year-old in particular, who's a cross-country skier and a competitive cross-country runner, like that dude is hungry and he's growing and he's a, you know, teenage boy, all these things. And it is like, it can be night and day. It can be like a Snickers commercial, okay? Where he will come in and he'll say, oh, I'm having, that was terrible. You know, I had a terrible time. And then just like, how about we talk about this after you eat this? And then 5 minutes later, it's like, oh, that was the most awesome thing I ever did. Like, it's like a completely different story, but it's the same subject, you know? Yes. And so, yeah, I really appreciate that.
That's so funny.
That's awesome.
Yes.
You did Appalachian Trail, we've talked about section hiking, micro adventures here, and now we're going to talk about the Continental Divide Trail, which Justin, you have done in its entirety by yourself. But first, I want to hear from Wella, because in your YouTube videos, you did a lot of YouTube videos on your hike. You, Wella, in the beginning of the video, talked about that separation and about in that first one about how he was going, and that's not as weird for you because, you know, you're used to military separations. I relate to that as a military spouse myself. Mm-hmm. But when I sent my husband off to hike about Ohio and on his many other adventures, I do get a little jealous.
Yes.
Okay, so did you feel like that when you sent him off to go do the Continental Divide Trail and you stayed home this time?
Oh, man. I mean, of course I would have loved to go hiking with him. Absolutely. Seen all those videos and seen all those photos, like what a dream. And he's my best friend, so I love spending time with him, and we love going on these adventures together. So was I a little bit bummed? Totally. But at the same time, Alaska is the most incredible state to live in, so really, you know, I'm not missing out that much.
And I feel that.
Yeah. And Justin has afforded me so many opportunities in life to pursue things that bring me great amount of joy. And in any other instance, we would have gone and done this hike together. But just the way our careers aligned and the life situations aligned, he suddenly had this time available. And it would have been so silly not to go on this hike. And I didn't have time available. So I'm not going to keep somebody from doing something incredible. And I'm also not the boss of you. Like, we're two free people in this joint relationship. And also, as part of my job, I fly for a living, which is something I really enjoy, and I get to see Alaska from above all the time. So I was bummed, but I still had the opportunity to be an active part of his hike, and we will be hiking the trail together someday. So it's not like it's never going to happen. It's just, we're just waiting for later.
Yeah. I can't say I'm going to hike around Ohio. So like I was okay living vicariously right? But like, he's gone and done other things. I'm like, oh man, like bear camp, come on. Yeah. Oh, wow. You know, so like, yeah, I mean, that's a thing. But I get what you're saying, because when he's off hiking in Ohio, I'm not sitting at home twiddling my thumbs. I'm right. off camping in Homer or whatever, you know,
yeah.
running some rad trails. So I completely relate to that. You were finishing your flight school when he went to do?
No, I was already a flight instructor.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yep. So I work as a flight instructor. I mean, now I work part-time as a flight instructor, and I also have another daytime job, but... Yeah, I got to see Alaska from above and have all kinds of other really fun adventures. So we had the opportunity to share those with each other, which was great.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. And then just, you know, getting to see the person that you love blooming and having the time of his life. Who wouldn't want that for another person? So
right.
it brought me a lot of joy.
I understand. Yeah. Okay, so Justin, tell us about the Continental Divide Trail. It's a whole, like, it's a bunch of different states. It's not in Alaska. Folks who may not even have ever set foot in that zone. So maybe just give us, like, the basics.
Yeah, no problem. So it's a trail that stretches all the way from Canada down to Mexico. Some people will say from Mexico to Canada, but they're going the wrong direction. You got to go southbound. But it passes through Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, Colorado, and then finishes in New Mexico. It's about 3,100 miles long or so. And I say that because the beauty about the Continental Divide Trail and what really drew me to it is, rather than being an A to B trail, like the Appalachian Trail, where there's a designated start, there's a designated route, there's a designated finish. The beauty about the Continental Divide Trail is that it spiders down the Continental Divide. So you can take multiple different routes. So you might have somebody that did 3,100 miles, but you also might have somebody that did 2,800 miles on the trail. And you get to choose these routes based on what your interests are. Some people will do them for resupplies. They're like, oh, it's just way more convenient because I went through a town here. It was only 60 miles between resupplies, as opposed to if I would have gone the other way, 150 miles between my next resupply. There could be views. There could be all kinds of really neat things. In fact, one of the early alternates that you have in Montana is you get the opportunity to go, you could either spend all day roller coastering around a bowl of mountains, which is still amazing, or you can drop down into this neat valley and get to a llama farm, which is a free hostel that you can stay there and literally hang out with llamas. And I believe the hosts, they're incredible. They host a GDMBR. They'll give you a sandwich. They'll bring you a free beer, all kinds of neat things.
Can I guess that you picked the food?
Yeah, that's a safe bet.
The food and the llamas.
Yes, absolutely. That was incredible. And that's what really makes it special, is the ability to build your own route. And coming from Alaska, where we do so much of that, where, like, hey, guess what? There is no trail from this route that I'm trying to do. So I've got to figure out how to make it happen. And I had gotten so used to that being up here that the Continental Divide Trail appealed to me. So, like, well, I can build my own route. And I would bet, unless you had somebody, like a couple like us, and we had married couples out there, if you took two different thru hikers, none of them are going to have the same route on that trail, because everyone at some point will have taken a different alternate for whatever reason.
Right. Pro-llama, anti-llama.
Pro-llama, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so you said the correct direction is north to south. So I got to know, why is that true?
Well... So that's a tough one. What it really does, I'm being facetious, but what it really does depend on is what your time is. Mm-hmm. But the big deciding factor for the Continental Divide Trail is the snow. If you're coming from the south going north, you're going to be hitting the snow in the San Juan Mountain Range in Colorado. And a lot of people, in fact, the very first northbounder, and northbounder meaning someone that was heading from Mexico to Canada, that direction of travel, I met, she was telling me about the snow she hit in Colorado and said, I was spending 12 to 15 hours a day pushing through snow, post-holing, and I would only make it 6 miles at the end of the day.
Oh, and that's so awful, too.
Yeah. Aww. Yeah, just demoralizing, where you're just grinding away and making no progress. So the benefit really of going southbound is that you're hiking later in the season. You start generally in late June and July. You don't have to deal with the snows quite as much because you're starting up in Montana in the summer. You may have a little bit, but it's not near as much as coming north. But the nice thing, I have to say with the northbounders, they got me on this one. They never had the sun in their eyes because you don't think about it.
But if I would you're never have thought of that.
Yeah, yeah, if you're heading southbound, you have the sun in your eyes the entire time going from east to west. But if you're heading northbound, it's at your back.
Did you get a nice sunglass tan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you should see my leg tan. It's pretty prolific.
It's still there.
We touched briefly earlier on your YouTube videos, but I did enjoy watching, like, your transformation, you know, from, like, clean-shaven Justin to, like, beardy Justin, grimy Justin.
Yeah.
That was pretty fun. How long did it take you?
Oh, boy. 102 days. It would have been a hair longer. I'm willing to bet about a week. But when I was in Wyoming, I had a wildfire that derailed me, and I had to get off trail. And in fact, funny enough, I saw the plume of smoke when I was in Wyoming. I'd been hiking the entire day. And through that section, I had no cell service. So I could see this massive wildfire in the distance. And I had no idea where I was in relation to it, because as I would curve around the mountains, the positioning of that fire would move. And I had no idea. It's like, well, I would love to know so I can make a decision.
Yeah.
Because Wyoming at that time had a lot of beetle kill, a lot of standing brush. Mm-hmm. So it was a tinderbox. And that night, I think I hiked to about midnight that night. And I remember looking on the horizon and I could see this red glow. And then I knew, like, I'm close to this thing. I've got to figure out what the heck I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I still didn't have cell reception, but what I did have was these Garmin InReach Messenger. So that is, if anyone doesn't know, that connects up to the satellites. You can send text messages to loved ones back home, and that's generally how I'd communicate. And I remember messaging Wella and being like, hey, and not wanting to make her panic. It's like, there's a wildfire, not nearby, but it might be. Could you just tell me where it's at?
Like playing it low-key.
Yeah, trying to, like, oh, I can see the glow, which means I'm close. And she reaches back out to me. She's like, yeah, it looks like it's over here. And I think she started connecting the dots. It was like, hey, this thing's like 6 miles from me right now.
And for what it's worth, the playing low-key is something we've been married for 11, we're going on 11 years, and we've had this in like different hunting trips too, and I can read right through that.
Yeah, it's for my benefit, so not necessarily fooling anyone.
Yeah.
But I got lucky. I was able to get it extracted the next day, but that ended up making me miss about a week's worth of the trail, because that passed through the Wind River Range in Wyoming, which was famous as one of the most beautiful parts of the trail, because you're hiking up and among the glaciers in the lower 48, which there's not too many left anymore. It's just a really special thing. So I was bummed about it, but honestly, in today's day and age of hiking, not surprising. The Pacific Crest Trail, most of those hikers have to road hike or hitchhike or skip and come back and do sections. So 102 days. That's a long way of answering your question.
That's a lot of days. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz, and I'm talking to Wella and Justin Jay about through hiking adventures, outdoors, journeys of all types. After this break, we will continue our conversation.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime, wherever you get your podcasts, or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz, and I am talking to Wella and Justin Jay about hiking adventures outside Alaska primarily, and what you see when you take a long journey. So, Justin, you hiked the Continental Divide Trail. That's primarily what we're talking about. I'm wondering, how does it compare to Appalachian Trail? You just noted that you didn't have cell reception in quite a number of parts of it. If I understand the Appalachian Trail correctly, most of it is cell coverage. So that's one way. But how else?
You know, it's really interesting having the perspective between those two trails now, looking back on it. The obvious ones are the social aspects of it, because the Appalachian Trail is known as a social trail. That trail may start anywhere between 2,000 to 3,000 people that kick off on it. And in fact, it's almost like a rolling block party as you make your way up the trail, because there's just so many people. Whereas with the Continental Divide Trail, I went 4 days without having a conversation longer than two sentences with another human being. In fact, I remember those two conversations. I was hiking uphill and I saw a hiker coming downhill, and he said, "Hey, are you a southbounder?" I said, "Yes." "Are you a northbounder?" He said, "Yes." Conversation one complete. And then later that day, I come down to a lake where I was going to camp, and I see two gentlemen there that were wrapping up a break. And the first one passes me and he says, "Hey, these mosquitoes are gone really bad right now." I was like, "Oh, okay." And then his buddy came by and said, "Mosquitoes are really, really terrible, man. Watch out." I said, "Okay." Conversation two complete. And that was all the human interaction I had for 4 days. And this is in the lower 48 too,
yeah,
to give you an idea about the CDT. It's the social aspect of it. I would say, though, this might be a hot take on it, though. I thought the trail itself was harder on the Appalachian Trail than the Continental Divide Trail. And a lot of that was because on the East Coast, it can very easily rain for 2 weeks straight.
Mm.
Whereas Continental Divide Trail, I think I may have had a week of rain in 102 days of hiking.
Yeah.
And that really will wear on you after a while. And just the overall tread of the trail itself, the AT is not meant to be an efficient trail. It will take you up what are called PUDs, pointless ups and downs.
Mm.
But the intent of it was, they're like, hey, there's a mountaintop. The trail builders wanted to go to every mountaintop. So you're constantly doing this roller coaster all day on the AT, whereas the CDT, that's not necessarily possible because you've got such big gains, because you're looking at 10, 11, 12,000 foot mountains.
Sure.
The terrain doesn't lend itself to being able to go to the peak of every single mountain.
Yeah.
Was the CDT more rugged? Absolutely. It was not near as well maintained as the AT was. Not to say it had bad maintenance. It's just not a very heavily trafficked
trail.
Right,
it's just less people. Yeah.
Exactly, which is the beauty of it too.
Right, right. When you say rain, you know, I immediately thought, wow, slippery trail, that's hard. But then also rain, in case anybody missed this, means you're wet. Like,
yes,
you are wet. Your stuff is wet. Your pack is wet. You are wet. Your feet are wet. Everything is wet. And wet is, you know, if you've never lived through like trail running or outdoor adventure in Alaska in August, wet is bad. Wet is not that fun. Wet is like, I want to go home.
Yeah, 100%.
Absolutely.
We had, was it in Virginia, on the Appalachian Trail, I think we had, was it a week or over a week of rain consistently?
Week straight.
Yeah.
Week straight.
That's too much.
The trail turned into a river, and there's some of my least favorite things were like putting on wet clothes in the morning.
Oh,
cold,
yeah,
wet clothes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were starting to sprout towards the end of it. There's a lot of water.
Sure. Not that fun. The other thing that strikes me about just like thinking through the Continental Divide Trail, like your pictures and your videos from the start of your hike in the north, reminded me a lot of Alaska.
Absolutely.
But then, of course, like, then you're in New Mexico, right? Which is not the same. So it, like, the it just changes so dramatically over time. And so did you like that? Did you like having new things to see all the time like that?
That's such a great question. It really speaks to the talent of the CDT, just exactly like you said. I remember one example in particular was in New Mexico. That's where it was most striking, because northern New Mexico is identical to Colorado, right? The geographic features don't care about our state boundaries, right?
Sure.
So it's all the same thing. But I remember coming down from all these ponderosa pines and this beautiful spruce, all these green trees, and I descended into a place called, is it Ghost Ranch? Not Ghost Ranch. I'm blinking on the name of it right now. But anyways, one of the first resupplies you come to in New Mexico. And as I descended, it became more and more like a desert. And it went from me being at the top with all these beautiful trees and this Colorado vibe to smack generic, what you close your eyes and imagine a desert with cactus and all.
Yeah.
Within an hour of hiking.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. And then the other thing that comes with that is wildlife.
Which is, yes,
like not at all Alaska-like.
Yes.
But, you know, if I understand your experience with bears up there, or down there in the lower 48, those were, I mean, we have those, but that was different, mm-hmm, too. So tell us about that. How was the wildlife different?
Well, the cows are pretty cool.
Okay, listen, if you come to Palmer, okay, and you run by the cow farm on the Old Glen, you can see cows.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing you don't think, but I saw thousands of cows because you're traveling through a lot of prairie land.
Yeah. Ranges. Yeah.
Well, what's the rating on this show? Are we talking PG-13? Because I've got some stories I could tell you about some animals.
Let's keep it family friendly.
We can keep it family friendly. Okay. We can do that. One of the fun parts or interesting things, funny animal stories that I'd had, was like, you've got national parks down there.
Sure.
And these animals get very habituated to humans. And that can make for funny scenarios. In fact, on one of my videos, I was setting up this beautiful shot. I started the trail with a tripod, by the way. I got rid of it pretty quick. And I set the tripod down. I started recording. I was going to do this beautiful shot of me walking away with this dramatic landscape below of all these beautiful turquoise lakes, sharp pointy mountains, glaciers. And I walked down, and you've got to walk back. Like, all these cool walking away shots. Like, I try to explain this to people. I'm like, hey, when you saw me do that, I walked that part of the trail three times. Once to set it up, once to walk back to the camera, and then once again to walk away from it. And as I turned to look back, I saw this marmot pop up out of the ground and looked, and he looked at me, and then he looked back at my camera, and he looked at me again, and then he bolted right to the camera and started chewing on it and licking the, licking the salt off it. And it's the funniest thing on video because you can actually hear him munching on it. And that's not the only animal. We had bighorn sheep that would steal people's trekking poles because they would set them down to take a break, eat a sandwich, what have you, and come back, and this sheep is running off with their trekking pole to eat on the salt. So that was really for those. One interesting encounter. I've got to talk about a cow encounter. I love cows, but I got to tell you about one. This was down in New Mexico, and if you don't know, you're not supposed to camp near a cow tank where they get water, because cows on the prairie or out on the range aren't super cool with humans, not in the way that you have some that are close by that interact with them on a day-to-day basis.
The Palmer cows,
for example. The Palmer cows, yeah. Yes. And a gentleman, I walked up on my water source, which was the cow tank, because there's not a lot of running water in New Mexico, so a lot of the times I drink out of cow ponds or cow tanks. He had spent the night there, right next to the tank. And I walked up, I see him packing up, and I look over and see these cows standing, waiting on him. And I walked over to get my water. I fill up my water bottle from the cow tank. I walk back. I was like, oh, well, I've got to get a second liter. So I walk over, the cows are still at a distance. I'm filling up my water, and about halfway through, I look up, and I've got four cows directly across from me. They had closed the distance while I was looking down, and they were actively drinking from the cow tank as I was filling my water up. And this is a kiddie pool. So it's not like it's far, maybe from me to you, like maybe 3 to 4 feet, and they're drinking from it. And I noticed that the bowl in the middle, and generally you want to stay away from those.
Typically.
He starts getting frustrated. And you know the thing where they'll go like, they'll start blowing and thrashing their head. So he starts doing that because he's agitated that I'm drinking his water. It's like, holy crap, but I still got to get water myself. So it's like, hey, buddy, this is the desert. Like, we're going to have a standoff right now and share. I know you're thirsty, but I've got to get my water. And really quickly, I get my water and I start to step away. And one of the cows on the end breaks off with me. And it's one of the females. And she looked agitated. It's like, oh my gosh, is this how the hike is going to end? Is I going to get stomped to death by the most placid creature on earth? And she actually escorted me away for about 15 feet. She ran me off away from the cow trough. And then once I was a sufficient distance away, she was satisfied and went back and went to drinking.
All right. Well, I will put that on my list of animals to avoid. I got moose on there. I got bear. I did not anticipate that cows would be making
sweet
the list.
Sweet cows. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, noted. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz, and I am talking to Justin and Wella Jay, which is a tongue twister for me today, I guess. All right. So, Justin, I am wondering about the concept of walking off the war. We talked about warrior expeditions at the very beginning of the show, and that's what they do, right? This sort of therapeutic hiking. So that was your Appalachian Trail experience. And I'm wondering how that played into your Continental Divide experience, if at all. Like, what is the intersection there?
That's such a great question. The Continental Divide was very boring. Very boring. And I say that in a great way. My approach for this trail was knowing the things that I knew from the Appalachian Trail and the lessons that we had listened there or gleaned from there, was that this approach, I would sit back and let the lessons of the trail come to me. And rather than trying to seek out something, I just wanted to figure out what was the trail going to provide me with in this instance. So I didn't go out there with necessarily a question that I wanted to have answered, where I may have done that before on the AT. And what's so beautiful about these trails is we talked about the cell phone reception and how you're in these areas where you don't necessarily have the ability to connect instantly. And what happens when we don't have constant stimulation? We get bored. But we've seen boredom as such a bad thing for so long that we try to fill the void, checking the phones, constant stimulation, social media, things like that. So when you don't have that and that's removed, that boredom, you actually start facing that inner dialogue and those thoughts within your mind. And it gives you the opportunity to take things off the shelf that you had put to the side and really take them and examine them, sometimes from a, I don't want to say a third party perspective, because you're almost in a meditative state when you're walking that far. I'm sure you've gotten there on your long distance runs, and then the pain of your legs brings you right back out of it, as it does.
And a need for snacks.
And the need for snacks, yes. And to have that boredom in a good way, and to examine those thoughts in your head, and to work and having the time and the space when you don't have these constant inputs for attention, that's something that's really hard to find nowadays. And that's what the CDT was giving to me. And along that same vein, I know with long distance hiking or long distance journeys, a lot of people have this perception that if you've got this problem to work towards, you can walk it off, but you absolutely can. You can take things to the trail where you're like, I'm going to work on this, I'm going to take time. But the secret about that is usually that doesn't happen. And that's because there's so much out there and it's so wonderful. You've got, for example, the physical difficulty of hiking alone, where maybe I'm trying to think of a career change. Well, I can't think of a career change if I'm exhausted from a 20-mile day, I'm starving, I want to eat my ramen and go to bed. So you just rack out and you can get caught up in the hiking, which is wonderful. And the social aspect too, because you're socializing. But the thing about that is, while you may not find what it is that you were seeking or what you thought you were seeking, the trail is going to bring you things that you may have not known that you needed. And it's such a beautiful thing. And you'll take these lessons that are so valuable to you that you didn't go looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering if it is possible to find that without going on a through hike.
I think so.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because the people, I mean, you know, who can, most people don't have the time to go hike for, like we talked about earlier, right?
Yeah.
I certainly don't. I barely have the time to go for a 50-minute run most days right now, right? That's modern life, and that's the life I'm living with my current job. But by taking that, even that 50 minutes, I find a benefit with that. Is there a secret sauce to doing that in a daily practice? Or, you know, at home practice?
Yeah, I think it's making time for yourself and doing those activities. I think you nailed it. Those activities that you enjoy and making time for your space and trying to get into a hot activity or hobby where you can get into a flow state. whether that's washing dishes, whether that's going for a run, whether that's mowing your lawn. I don't think, for me anyway, I don't think that you have to go do a huge adventure to really find those special things.
If I could add on to that, I agree with what you're saying. You don't have to go on a long distance hike to have an experience that feels meditative or where you have introspection or where you're provided with some lessons. I think the key in all of it is to find a way to find quiet and to remove distractions.
Yeah.
And I think a huge key in the way we maintain that in our everyday life is removing the inputs from social media or constantly having that phone, you know, just learning how to set boundaries with your social media intake and with your phone and just external intake, whatever that is, friends, family, your phone, TV, radio, although we love NPR and Alaska Public Media.
Thank you. Or an Outdoor Explorer podcast.
Something we discuss is just having certain non-negotiables where you carve out a certain amount of time or a routine. And like he was saying, I think sometimes as humans, we really strive for these like perfect routines. And if I run this long and if I drink this smoothie and if I do this meditation and if I brush my teeth this way, then I will find peace. And that's not really how that works.
Right.
I think what pays off a lot more is just having consistency in a routine that works with your life. And if that consistency is mowing the lawn, doing the dishes, whatever that is, and doing that in peace on a regular basis and carving out that time for yourself, I think you'll find a lot of benefit in that.
Yeah, what's that saying? Consistency over intensity?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't mean that intensity is bad, because I would argue that hiking for over 100 days is very intense, right?
But
that was a good thing for you, okay? Mm-hmm. But it's not something that you can't have that intensity all the time.
Yeah.
But you can strive towards a middle ground with consistency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And having a practice.
I think something that Justin touched on as well that's really important is boredom. And because we are so conditioned to fill every second of every minute of every day with a thing that we never have the opportunity. What happens when you're bored? When you're bored, you have an opportunity for thoughts to come up and for your body to process whatever, like he was saying, whatever you put away and put in a box, put on the shelf. And so finding a place to have boredom or going for a walk without your phone, or we go to the gym and we don't bring our phone with us. And it's fascinating. If you're not constantly on your phone and you look around you and see what everyone else is doing, you're like, wow. But then also you notice your brain wanting to have stimulation and input, and it's not getting that. And then it just has to sit with itself for a little bit. But that's really where a lot of the growth happens. So I think if you can incorporate boredom into your life, we probably find a lot of peace.
Yes.
Well, and it's a practice to get used to that, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's hard to do it at first, just like running is hard at first. If you've never run before and you want to be a runner, 1 mile feels real long. But if you do them 1 mile enough, it starts to not feel as long. Although I would argue the first mile of any run isn't wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
But like you do get used to it in a way that you don't get used to, that you would not be used to it if you were just starting. Mm-hmm. And building that practice of not having constant inputs is the same way. I talk to people who don't want to or aren't interested in going for a run or cycling or doing or even hiking without music or, you know, I need something going or I want to listen to something or, you know, people who are even like listening to like a movie while running or you're on a treadmill doing that because you're not comfortable without that stimulation.
Exactly. I feel like the people that say I need that are the people that need it. Like need silence the most.
Yeah. Although I will say, like on the flip side of that, if I am running a certain, and I imagine this would be how I feel if I was doing a lot of consecutive days of hiking. If I am training at a certain volume, I like run out of thoughts. Okay. I have no more thoughts to think. And so I will make myself run the first half of my run without any sound, music or anything. But then as a little tiny reward for making it that far, now I get to listen to a podcast.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But I don't ever feel like doing that until I reach like a certain volume. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, I just look like out of things to think of. I'm all done. I've thought all the thoughts.
Love it.
You know, did you ever feel like you thought all the thoughts in the land on your hike and now you're done?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so what do you do when you've thought all the thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, I would do same as you. I didn't listen to any podcast or any music, anything like that, until I was probably about 2,000 miles into the hike, when things kind of ran out. It's like, well, it's time to fill the gaps. And believe it or not, those journeys, you get tired of it after a while, like hiking day in and day out. It's still work. It's wonderful work. But by the time you're 2/3 of the way into it, you're like, man, I'm kind of ready to wrap this thing up. And right. That's when I would start filling in those gaps with the podcast, the music, but also try to use it as a reflection of basically whenever I would start spiraling, like, man, this sucks. It's raining. I just kicked
a
cactus.
Time for a snack.
Yes. Time for a snack. And then also to think about how incredible this is that I have the opportunity to be doing this. So the last third of the hike was more a mental exercise, I would say, than physical. Because at that point, you know you can do it. Yeah. Nothing's broken. You're going to finish as long as you don't quit. And that's usually going to be mentally speaking.
But so much of endurance sports is like that. You know, that like the body can, but the mind, maybe not so much.
Yes.
You know, when I've quit things, it's because I could have physically done it in almost every circumstance, but I just did not want to. So.
Yeah, which is fair too.
And that's okay. You know, it's okay to not want to do something, right? But that has to be a part of it. And it helps to acknowledge that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You also made video on your hike. So how many hours of videos did you do? We talked about the marmot's special appearance. So what else was there?
Yes. So there was 93 videos. I looked this up beforehand. 93 videos with 22 hours, 17 minutes, and 45 seconds of total runtime if you wanted to watch them all.
I did. Okay. I will tell you, I watched the first one and the last one.
That's okay. Yeah, you hit the highlights.
Yeah. And I did see the marmot in your... awesome. You know, closing like special events of the hike reel and the plume of smoke that you talked about earlier.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm familiar with that. What did making those videos give you on the trail?
A different perspective. I was more in touch, I would say, with the hike because I would also look at it from a perspective of, oh, that would look really good on camera. So I was more in tune with things that were going on around me. And it was also a great opportunity to share what I was doing with others because it wasn't just me out there. I might have been the one walking it, but I had this entire network of family and friends behind me that were all cheering for me and they were all supporting me, whether it was direct support or emotional support. And to be able to share that was really special for me because it's like, hey, yes, I'm doing this amazing thing, but the only reason I'm here is because of everything that you guys are enabling me to do. So it was also a way of bringing my family and friends along the way with me. So even though I may have only had a 2-sentence conversation with people, I still got to chat every single day on that camera with friends and family back home. And that just added a lot to it.
Yeah. And now you have a literal digital video log of your experience.
Yeah, which is also really nice to have it archived.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, did you watch his videos every day, or like how did you stay connected while he was on the trail? Other than like snack resupplier, which is like a very important job, as we have discussed.
Yes. Yeah. So I did his primary resupply, but in terms of staying connected, I did watch the videos. That was like my little treat that I would get, and the way he would upload his videos. He'd upload them to YouTube, but they still needed a thumbnail and hashtags and a bunch of other things. So I did the back end of the video editing, really not a whole lot of editing, but just adding and then publishing them. And that was an opportunity for me to stay connected and also a really nice way for me to feel like I was still involved with the trail, because at no point did I really feel disconnected. And we talked enough on his inReach and I knew the main characters and actually did most of his logistical coordinating for all of the different places where he stayed. So I knew all the characters of his story. So now I feel like I know everybody. I had an opportunity to meet some of them during the hike when I visited him in Colorado.
Yeah.
And that was so neat. And so it helped me just feel closer and then also see what the Continental Divide is like and have something to look forward to when we go do it together.
Awesome. That's so different than the military experience of like being a part.
Yeah.
Because you hear stories about your... the other military members or your spouse's unit or whatever, but you may never meet these people. You know, my husband talks about so many different people in his unit, you know, and we're separated quite frequently. I'm just like, okay, however they are in my mind is how they will always be, because I will never see this person in person.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, when you finished your hike in the video that I watched, okay, the thing, I noticed something at the end of your video. First of all, I noticed that there was nobody there. Like, there's the end in the distance, like, very anticlimactic, you know, in terms of, like, we're here now, I guess, right? The other thing was that you said that you didn't really know how to sum it up, that it was a lot and it was hard to sum up. So I'm wondering if you've had some months since then, how can you sum it up now?
Yeah, yeah. If I had to sum it up, I would say knee pain. No, with that, I talked about this in the videos as well, but the biggest thing I got was kindness. Mm. And I had an incredible act of kindness while I was out on the trail, because that's one of the things that you experience in long distance hiking is just how many kind strangers there are out there to help you. And I had one woman when I was hitchhiking on the side of the road, because that's how you get to town from trail, was hitchhiking. And she pulled off on the opposite side of a highway, total stranger, had no idea who the heck I was, just saw me hitching. She's traveling the opposite direction to travel. She sat there for about 15 minutes, got out of her car, crossed this busy highway, and I watched this thing just totally aghast, because this is an older woman, like 70, 80 years old. She gets on the side of the highway, and she brings me a sandwich and a drink and some chips. It's like, I made this for you. So this woman had literally seen me on the other side of the highway, pulled off, made a sandwich in her car, walked it across. And it really stunned me, because, like, I can't believe that amount of kindness. And if she could be so kind to me, a complete and total stranger, what can I do for other people?
Well, thank you guys so much for spending this time with me today and for bringing our listeners in on your hike and your through hike experience, your section hikes. I've really enjoyed having you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks so much for listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Amy Bouchatz. A special thanks to my guests, Justin and Wella J. Now, don't forget to get out and find your own adventures. And from all your hosts at Outdoor Explorer, we'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska. Tobin Shelby is its producer, and the program is edited by Ammon Swenson and Crystal Hyde. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed on the show are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can listen to Outdoor Explorer anytime at alaskapublic.org and in your favorite podcast app. If you have a question, comment, or a topic suggestion, email outdoorexplorer@alaskapublic.org.